Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody, and happy Thanksgiving Day. Before we begin all the festivities, so I want to wish you the best. We'll start off with what's happening in New York. Balloons, bands, celebrities, and Santas. And Santa are all part of the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, which kicked off this morning. So beloved characters like Snoopy, SpongeBob, SquarePants will take to the skies above New York City this morning, while bands march along the streets as the annual Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade ushers in the holiday season. The parade starts on Manhattan's Upper West Side and makes its way alongside Central Park in front of big crowds and a national television audience before ending up in front of Macy's flagship store on 34th Street. Among the big names performing is Cher, who just released her first Christmas album. The Oscar, Emmy, and Grammy Award winner has a prime spot, performing just before the arrival of Santa Claus, which marks the end of the parade. Other celebrities and musical groups are taking part, including John Batiste, Adele B. DeVoe, Brandy, Jesse James Decker, Pentatonix, and Miss America 2023, Grace Stanky. I'm pronouncing that right. And the parade also includes performances from the casts on Broadway shows. The balloons debuting this year include Leo the Lizard, the character from a Netflix film was more than 40 feet tall, as well as ones that had been there before, like SpongeBob, coming in at 44 feet. Now, some characters, like Snoopy, have been in the parade for many years, but this year's balloon is a new Beagle Scout Snoopy version, celebrating the 50th anniversary of his first appearance in the Peanuts comics. It's going to be a magical experience, an experience full of spectacle, full of entertainment, full of joy, full of celebration, said Will Cross, who's the executive producer of the parade. The parade isn't just about what's going on in the skies, though. At street level, the procession includes more than two dozen floats, interspersed with marching bands from around the country, and a number of clown crews among the 8,000 people participating, organizers said. This will be the 97th time the parade has been held since 1924. The broadcast is hosted by Savannah Guthrie, Hoda Gottlieb, and Al Roker from Today, and it airs on NBC. Unbelievable, literally unbelievable. Now, let's look at some other things that have come to light, so bear with me a moment. Bear with me one second here. Want to make sure this is right. Bear with me. Okay. It seems a junior explorer's unique discovery reveals a new lithium hotspot. In the tundra of northern Quebec, where none had searched until recently, the largest lithium deposit in the Americas was just found. The market cap of the company behind the discovery shot up over 100 times on the news. It said early entry, Discovery Lithium Inc. believes they found a nearby formation that could be just as large and just as valuable. We had just found it, the telltale signs of a large mineral deposit. He feels just as giddy every time. Every major find feels fresh. Only this time, he was looking for gold. Ryan was looking for a metal likely to be even more lucrative over the coming years. Lithium. Using a combination of old-fashioned prospecting with cutting-edge tech, some of the gear invented by himself, Ryan believes he's found one of the most promising potential lithium formations in the world. He believes this field could someday rival anything found in South America or Australia. Initial surveys have been promising. Majors like Rio Tinto, a $100 billion miner, are moving into the James Bay area of northern Quebec right now. They know that when the man responsible for the second Yukon gold rush finds something interesting, it's worth following. So combined with major initial finds in similar nearby geology, Rio Tinto is investing up to $65.5 million into local partnerships. However, the majors are not the first movers in the icy north of Quebec, near James Bay and Nunavik, where this lithium rush is kicking off. The distinction belongs to a new small exploration company that arrived early. So the Patriot Battery Metals, among holds the rights to the largest lithium pegmatite formation in the Americas, just south of Ryan's discovery. Some find that deposit. Patriot Battery Metals market cap increased from around $10 million to over $800 million currently. In fact, investors that purchased shares in February 2022 at around 50 cents saw their investment grow to over $17.50 in the following 12 months. That's a 35-fold increase in a year. But the formation is only the tip of the iceberg. This area has never been seriously explored for lithium or for most metals. It is known for nickel, with Glencore, Raglan nickel mine nearby, along with the infrastructure a mine needs. And with that infrastructure in place, even a modest find of lithium would prove profitable. But we're not talking about what it is, what is likely to be a modest find. So the geology is ideal, the potential exponential. Now, this could easily be a discovery that could rival or surpass the one recently announced by Patriot Battery Metals. And these are very early signs. There are no guarantees that the promise of a large lithium-rich formation will bear fruit, but that's the situation, and that's how it goes. So, fascinating stuff, as they say. Now let's look at some other issues, which hopefully you'll find of interest. Bear with me a moment. Okay. One second. Okay, I want to get to something else, which hopefully you'll find of interest. Bear with me a moment here. Okay. Well, it's Thanksgiving today, and I want to read this to you. The title is Thanksgiving, a Uniquely American Tradition, written by Bob Weir. To be honest with you, I thought I had posted this earlier, and what I noticed was that I couldn't find the article, and I'm on such heavy medication at times, I don't know if I'm coming or going, but it turns out I knew that I had posted it, and yet I couldn't find the article. And it didn't dawn on me to look at one other place where I could have found if I really did post it or not. Well, turns out I did, and then I reposted it this morning because I said, this is ridiculous, I can't find Bob Weir's article. So let me read it to you. He's based out of Fountain in South Carolina. As we prepare for the annual Thanksgiving feast with family and friends, let's keep in mind how fortunate we are to live in such a bountiful country. Even those considered poor will have access to turkey dinners, compliments of the social service agencies in every town and city from coast to coast. With all of our political and social differences, we are always united in our belief that no one should go hungry. We are a wealthy and proud nation that was born and nourished with the philanthropic milk of human kindness. However, even humanitarianism must have limitations, otherwise it will lead to abuse. And the reason our country is in this wealth-sucking black hole is because of an elite ideological group of elected representatives who think they can wave a magic wand and create not equal opportunity, but equal results. Hence, if you didn't work hard and save enough money for a down payment on a house or a car, that doesn't mean you should be denied something that others have. Our parents wanted to make us happy. They understood the danger of taking satisfaction to the extreme. In addition, they understood the need to teach us the merits of self-sacrifice. They realized that we would grow up and be released into a world. Clinton was a key factor in our maturity. If you had permissive parents, they probably gave you every time you, they gave in every time you pouted, screamed, or engaged in other childish tantrums. But if you were really lucky, you had parents who taught you that life isn't always fair and that nobody owes you a living. They were preparing you for adulthood. What our government is doing today exemplifies the permissive parent spoiled child syndrome. Liberal ideologues say they should have everything you want, that freedom is unlimited, and every grievance should be soothed by the curative balm of government largesse. Conversely, conservatives say you must take responsibility for your own future and not use the blame game as a crutch. When you take advantage of a legal product like cigarettes, despite warnings of ill effects, you should not expect a multi-million dollar reward for your own lack of discipline when you get sick. Blowing up like a tick on fast food burgers, fries, and shakes doesn't mean you have the right to get rich as part of a class action lawsuit brought by an army of obese opportunists. And getting pregnant because you didn't have responsibility, behave responsibly by taking precautions shouldn't give you a license to kill the child growing inside you. Behavior must have consequences, otherwise we'll be ruled by animal instincts. Freedom must have limitations, otherwise we'll have chaos. Civilization is a special contract in which the participants must agree on the terms of an orderly existence. And those terms involve moral obligations that are consistent with a dominant culture. History teaches us that great civilizations are conquered from within, perhaps because in their striving for greatness, they neglect and abandon the principles that built their success. And those principles usually were and are grounded in religion. Before there were laws and books, there was religion in the hearts and minds of people struggling to carve a decent life out of a cruel and brutal landscape. Before there was a constitution to guide us in the building of a nation, there was a religion to guide us in the spirit of recognition of the soul. Yet in spite of the lessons of history, we find ourselves in the classic struggle between good and evil. Murder, rape, child abuse, and pornography have become so commonplace that the public pays scant attention unless the victim or the offender is a celebrity. Bodies found in garbage dumpsters may not be mentioned at all if a sports playoff game is in the headlines. We have been systematically conditioned to tolerate behavior that once would have elicited gasps from even the most seasoned exhibitionists. It appears that we have lost our ability to be shocked. Nevertheless, in the face of all this evidence that we are in desperate need of a spiritual renaissance, those who strive for a rebirth of values are pejoratively referred to as members of the religious right, quote unquote. In other words, if you want to return to the days when 12-year-olds were not having sex with their teachers, an almost weekly headline, child molesters weren't soliciting children on the internet through NAMBLA, and murders didn't occur in multiples, daily headline. You must be some sort of extremist. Well, if an extremist means having faith in a higher power and clinging to values-based moral code, it's a label we should wear proudly. It was worn by our ancestors when they celebrated the first Thanksgiving in the New World. Just brilliant, brilliant deduction, brilliant dissertation by none other than Bob Weir. I'm honored that he graces our website with his work. Absolutely brilliant, brilliant, brilliant work. And of course, Netsky is his wife, and she's been rock solid. And if you go to our website, and Bob Weir, his last name is spelled W-E-I-R, you'll find his photo, which was taken by none other than Netsky Rodriguez, his wife. Just fantastic. Just love the guy. Absolutely brilliant. Brilliant, wonderful, compassionate, intuitive, introspective, amazing. And he hasn't dropped a beat. It's truly amazing. The influence he's had, certainly on me, and hopefully our readers as well, and our listeners. It's just such a compelling article. Absolutely fantastic. Well, let's look at some other things that are taking place around the world. One second. Well, the Gaza truce is going to start on Friday as opposed to today, says Qatar. And bear with me. So world leaders hail the Israel-Hamas truce deal and the release of hostages. The world leaders on Wednesday, yesterday, welcomed the truce deal between Israel and Hamas that agreed to a four-day halt to the devastating war in Gaza, accompanied by the release of dozens of hostages held by the militant group in return for Palestinian prisoners by Israel. The agreement marks the biggest diplomatic breakthrough since Hamas's bloody cross-border October 7 attack on southern Israel that prompted Israel to launch a bombing campaign and ground offensive in Hamas-ruled Gaza. So Israel's government and Hamas agreed to a four-day pause in fighting to allow the release of 50 hostages held in Gaza in exchange for 150 Palestinians imprisoned in Israel and the entry of humanitarian aid into the besieged Palestinian enclave. The deal, which was brokered by Qatar, Egypt, and the United States, came after 5 weeks of negotiations, according to a U.S. official. U.S. President Joe Biden said late on Tuesday he was deeply relieved that some hostages taken when Hamas militants stormed into Israel on October 7 will soon go free. He says, "I am extraordinarily gratified that some of these brave souls will be reunited with their families once this deal is fully implemented," Biden said in a statement released by the White House. Biden thanked the leaders of Qatar and Egypt for their, quote, critical leadership, end quote, in reaching the deal and hailed Israel for agreeing to an extended pause in fighting in Gaza to allow the delivery of humanitarian assistance. Senior U.S. officials said that three Americans, including three-year-old Abigail Moore Idan, were among the 50 hostages earmarked for staggered release from Thursday, which now turns out will be Friday. Qatar on Wednesday provided more details on the deal. The starting time of the pause will be announced within the next 24 hours and last for 4 days, subject to extension, Qatar's foreign ministry said in a statement. Egypt's President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi hailed the success on Wednesday of the mediation it conducted alongside Qatar and the United States, also welcomed the planned exchange of hostages for prisoners held in Israeli jails, his office had said. And then it's a moment of real hope. That's what French President Emmanuel Macron welcomed the deal, adding that he was working to free, quote, all, end quote, the hostages held by Hamas. We are working tirelessly to ensure that all hostages are released. The humanitarian truce that has been announced must allow aid to enter and help the people of Gaza, Macron said on X. So France's foreign minister, Catherine Colonna, hailing the truce deal as a moment of real hope, quote-unquote, said that she hopes the eight French nationals believed to be held by Hamas would be among those freed. Quote, we hope that there will be French people among the first batch of hostages to be released, Colonna told France Inter Radio. So European Union Ursula von der Leyen on Wednesday said she hoped would allow for more humanitarian aid to be brought into the besieged Palestinian enclave, saying she has ordered her European Commission to step up aid deliveries. The European Commission will do its utmost to use this pause for humanitarian surge to Gaza, she said in a statement, adding that, quote, I wholeheartedly welcome the agreement, end quote. Germany's Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock hailed the agreement between Israel and Hamas Wednesday as a breakthrough, while urging vital aid, quote, end quote, to be sent to Gaza. Breaks the announced release of the first major group of hostages is a breakthrough, even if nothing in the world can undo their suffering, Baerbock said on X, formerly known as Twitter. The humanitarian pause must be used to bring aid to people in Gaza. So, that's the story there. Bear with me a moment here. Bear with me a moment. I want to check this out as well. Yeah, this is about an hour ago, which I basically told you, but I'll read this for you because Qatar says that the Gaza truce is going to start on Friday. So mediator Qatar said a pause in fighting will come into effect on Friday morning and will be followed by the release of 13 hostages in the afternoon. Meanwhile, Israel said it detained the director of the Al-Shifa hospital. So, temporary ceasefire between Israel and the militant group Hamas is set to start at 7 o'clock in the morning. That's 5 o'clock Greenwich Mean Time on Friday, said Qatar, the deal's key mediator. Israel's war cabinet approved on Wednesday a four-day ceasefire with Hamas militants, in which militants were to release some 50 hostages held in Gaza. Mayed al-Ansari, a spokesperson for Qatar's foreign ministry, said the first batch of 13 hostages was to be released at 4 p.m. He added a list of civilians to be released has been received. Obviously, every day will include a number of civilians as agreed to, total 50 within the 4 days, he added. And Qatar, which has been leading mediation efforts between Israel and Hamas, expects Palestinians to be released from Israeli jails as part of the deal. And the deal would also allow for aid to enter the besieged Gaza Strip as hundreds of thousands remain displaced and in dire humanitarian conditions since the conflict broke out on October 7th. Qatar said aid would be going in as soon as possible. Then Israel, 2 hours ago, confirms Al-Shifa Hospital chief has been detained. Israeli troops detained the director of the Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza on Thursday, the Israeli Defense Forces said on social media. The IDF claimed that the hospital had been used as a Hamas command center under the watch of Mohammed Abu Samia, who has been taken for interrogation. Quote, in the hospital under his management, there was extensive Hamas terrorist activity, it said in a statement. Shortly before the confirmation of the arrest, IDF spokesperson Peter Werner told Deutsche Welle that Abu Samia should, quote, should definitely be questioned in order to answer what exactly he knew and what he didn't know, end quote. Hamas, which is categorized as a terror group by the United States, European Union, Germany, and others, denounced the arrest and called on the International Committee of the Red Cross and other international organizations to push for his release. We strongly condemn the arrest of the director of the Al-Shifa Hospital, Dr. Mohammed Abu Salmiya, and a number of medical personnel who remained in the hospital to facilitate the evacuation of the remaining patients and wounded there, Hamas said in a statement. Khalid Abu Samra, a chief of the department at the hospital, also told the Agence France-Presse news agency that, quote, several other senior doctors, end quote, were among those detained. The loved ones of Israeli hostages are holding a vigil in Tel Aviv as the agonizing wait goes on for the families of those being held in Gaza. Deutsche Welle's Ben Farjulin reports from Tel Aviv, where some relatives are holding a permanent vigil. As of 4 hours ago, Israel says that it struck more than 300 targets in the Gaza Strip. Israel's army said its air force struck more than 300 Hamas targets in the Gaza Strip within one day. The targets included military command centers, underground terror tunnels, weapon storage facilities, weapon manufacturing sites, and anti-tank missile launch posts, Israel Defense Forces, the IDF said on social media. The IDF also continued its ground offensive with troops, quote, striking terrorists locating underground sites and striking terror infrastructure in the Gaza Strip, it added. Well, Israeli forces also located a tunnel shaft inside a mosque in northern Gaza, the IDF said. Hamas, which has been classified as a terror group in the United States, European Union, Germany, and others, operates using a network of tunnels underneath Gaza. Okay. Well, families of Israeli hostages are waiting for the deal to be implemented. Deutsche Welle special correspondent Aya Ibrahim said there was, quote, certainly disappointment, end quote, among some Israelis on Thursday over delays in the hostage deal. Quote, people were really holding their breath, end quote, she said from Jerusalem. Quote, so this will undoubtedly be disappointing and frustrating until they finally see their loved ones, hopefully rejoin them and come back home, end quote. At a rally in Tel Aviv on Wednesday, the mother of 22-year-old musician Alon Ohel, kidnapped from the Supernova Dance Festival, told Deutsche Welle that, quote, everyone had to come back, end quote. Quote, for this country to be able to continue to thrive, all of the captives have to return, all of them. It's really important, Edith Ohel had said. Actor Avi Dor said he had hope and fear in equal measure. I don't trust Hamas, he said. I don't trust people who can kidnap children, three-year-olds, kill and rape innocent girls. I don't trust them, end quote. Deutsche Welle's Aya Ibrahim said the delay of the hostage deal also means hundreds of trucks carrying humanitarian aid are still waiting to enter Gaza. Quote, it's important to note that while this delay is disappointing, it's not completely unexpected, she added. Officials have been saying since the beginning of the negotiations of this deal that this kind of thing is only done when it's done, just because there are so many moving parts to a deal like this. Then, about 8 hours ago, a U.S. warship shoots down a possible Houthi drone. A U.S. warship in the Red Sea has intercepted a number of drones that were launched from parts of Yemen controlled by the Houthi rebel group on the morning of Yemen time of November 23rd. The USS Thomas Hudner, DDG 116, shot down multiple one-way attack drones launched from Houthi-controlled areas in Yemen, the U.S. Central Command said on social media today. Sustained no damage or injury, it added. Earlier on Wednesday, the Houthis said they launched a series of long-range missiles towards Israel. The Iran-backed rebel group has vowed to attack Israel in retaliation for its war against Islamist militant Hamas. Also, 9 hours ago, Israel strikes Hezbollah in Lebanon. Israeli fighter jets struck Hezbollah, quote, terror infrastructure, end quote, in Lebanon overnight, the military said on Thursday. The Israeli Defense Forces said on the social media platform Telegram that its aircraft and troops also, quote, struck a terror cell that attempted to launch rockets into Israeli territory and a terror cell that fired at IDF troops, end quote. Hezbollah said at least 5 of its members were killed in the attack, including the son of Mohammed Ra'ad, who is the chairman of Hezbollah's bloc in the Lebanese government. Parliament. The Israeli government says Iran-backed Hezbollah has links to Hamas in Gaza. Both are considered a terrorist group by Israel, the U.S., Germany, and other governments. And then it seems that Yemen's Houthis say they launched the missiles at Israel. Yemen's Houthi rebels said that they launched a batch of long-range large missiles towards southern Israel, including the Red Sea city of Eilat. The Iran-backed rebel group has launched at least 6 aerial attacks against Israel since conflict broke out on October 7th. The Houthis are staunch foes of Israel and have vowed to continue aerial attacks and hijackings of Israeli ships. Biden spoke to the leaders of Israel, Qatar, and Egypt. U.S. President Joe Biden spoke to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and the leaders of Qatar and Egypt after the Israel-Hamas hostage deal was approved earlier on Wednesday, the White House said. Biden emphasized, to quote, the importance of maintaining calm, end quote, along the Lebanese border as well as in the West Bank, when he spoke with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Wednesday, according to the White House. The two leaders spoke after Israel's war cabinet had approved a 4-day deal with Hamas militants to pause fighting and free some hostages. The leaders agreed that the work was not done yet, and Biden said he will work on securing release of all hostages, the White House said. Biden told Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi the U.S. would not permit the forced relocation of Palestinians from Gaza or the West Bank. The U.S. would also not allow the redrawing of the borders of Gaza. During the call with Gaza and with Qatar Emir Tamim bin Hamad al-Thani, the two leaders committed, quote, committed to remain in close contact, end quote, to ensure the hostage deal is fully implemented. And Qatar has strong ties with both the United States and Hamas. So we told you, of course, that the hostages won't happen before Friday. Let me see what else is going on. Bear with me a moment. This is from Germany. A Berlin exhibition is shining light on child abduction. It's written by Marcel Fustenbaum. All over the world, authoritarian regimes and dictatorships have abducted children to coerce intimate and intimidate and punish others. An exhibition at the Berlin City Hall shines a light on this grim reality. Leonardo Fossati Ortega has come all the way from Argentina to Berlin to tell the story of his childhood. When Leonardo was born in 1977, his home country, Argentina, was controlled by a military dictatorship. His mother, Inez, still a teenager at the time, was active in a youth organization. His father, Ruben, was at university, and both were hunted down by Argentina's junta and vanished, never to be seen again, and most likely murdered. Many other Argentinians, just like Inez and Ruben, also disappeared during Argentina's military dictatorship, which only ended in 1983. Berlin City Hall is currently dedicating a special exhibit to Leonardo's story and many others like him. The idea was hatched by the Foundation for the Study of Communist Dictatorship in East Germany, along with the Elisabeth Kiesemann Foundation. Leonardo was not raised by his biological parents. Quote, I always questioned my identity because my parents were more like grandparents compared to those of my friends. I couldn't find any similarities in their appearance either, I told Deutsche Welle. It was only when Leonardo was 20 years old that he started asking for his guardian, about his real parents. They then told me the truth. They said they had been told by a midwife from the neighborhood that Leonardo was the abandoned child of a young La Plata woman who did not keep the boy. Leonardo tried finding the midwife, but did not succeed. One day, a friend at Buenos Aires Drama School suggested he contact grandmothers of the Plaza de Mayo group in search of his groups, of his roots. This group of our courageous women had formed during the Argentinian military dictatorship, pressing those in power to reveal the whereabouts of their daughters and their grandchildren, some of whom had been born in prison or abducted. After the junta was gone, the group used blood samples to set up a gene database. The database allowed Leonardo to discover his parents' identity. Quote, my biological family, whose blood samples were stored in the database, had been searching for me for almost 28 years, he told Deutsche Welle. He finally met his grandparents. My God. Today, there's a picture of biological father on display at the Berlin exhibition. But even until this day, there is not even a picture of his mother. Leonardo takes comfort in the fact that he now knows the truth. Quote, for the first time, I recognize similarities with other people, with my family, end quote. There are around 130 other Argentinian individuals like him who eventually manage to find their families, but there are also many hundreds who were separated from their parents as children and never saw them again. But 46-year-old Leonardo does not want to give up hope. He sees himself as part of a larger community connected by a shared experience. Quote, it is very important for us to continue the search for our families, make new friends, and connect, end quote. Alexander Lototsky was born in 1948 in the Soviet-administered Bautzen prison camp, where his mother was incarcerated for alleged acts of espionage. She had been sentenced to 15 years in prison and forced labor. During the first 2 years of his life, Alexander was moved to different camps and finally sent to a children's home. One can learn about his story at the Berlin exhibition, too. There were many similar stories like his that unfolded after the end of World War II in the Soviet occupation zone, which later became the German Democratic Republic, the GDR. It was not until 1956 that Alexander, who is now in his 70s, was finally allowed to return to his mother, who was released from prison due to serious illness. She died at the age of only 41. Alexander's father was a Ukrainian man who had been deported to Germany by the Nazis in 1943 and used as a forced laborer. His mother never saw him again. The exhibition is incredibly important to me because I have been trying to draw attention to the stories of political prisoners and their children for decades, Alexander advised Deutsche Welle. Interest in these tragic family affairs increased after the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989, but soon waned. Quote, I somehow have the feeling that people no longer think it's that important, Alexander had said. Well, East Germany threatened to take away children. In communist East Germany, authorities would have threatened to take away women's children if they didn't cooperate with the regime. In some cases, this meant working for East Germany's secret police, the so-called Stasi. Quote, this is a method that dictatorships use time and time again to put pressure on their opponents, explained Alexander. Evelyn Zupke has heard many such stories. She was elected by the German parliament to act as an ombudsman to draw attention to the plight of all those who were persecuted by the East German regime, which was toppled in the nonviolent revolution of 1989. Well, talking to victims about what happened to them is always moving to me, Evelyn Zupke told Deutsche Welle. Breaking the silence is a great challenge for them, but doing so is of great value to society, end quote. Tragic experiences of people like Alexander Lototsky and Leonardo Fossati Ortega make these seemingly abstract stories more personal and relatable. Visitors to Berlin's Stolen Children exhibition can learn about many more such tragic tales from all over the world, including the former Soviet Union, El Salvador, and Canada. One of the exhibition panels states that the forcible separation of parents and children is not a thing of the past and continues to say that since the Russian invasion of Ukraine, thousands of children have been abducted from eastern Ukraine and taken to Russia. Chinese authorities are deporting Uyghur children to re-education camps, and terrorist organizations such as Boko Haram are abducting girls in Nigeria. The Berlin City Hall exhibition remains open to the public until the end of November of 2023. Unbelievable, huh? Truly amazing stuff that goes on in the world. And yet so many people are obtuse when it comes to even knowing of it. So very, very interesting. Now, what is NATO's Balkan plan as Kosovo and Bosnia wobble? NATO Chief Jens Stoltenberg conducted a quick tour of the delicate Western Balkan region this week. But what is the military alliance trying to do? Well, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg wrapped up a tour of Western Balkan countries this week in a show of support for and engagement in a region with fires on multiple security fronts. Quote, this region is strategically important to NATO, but there are reasons for concern, Stoltenberg said at a press conference in the North Macedonian capital of Skopje on Wednesday at the end of his trip. Quote, we see secessionist threats in Bosnia and Herzegovina, a fragile security situation in Kosovo, and stalled normalization between Belgrade and Pristina. Since the end of the Cold War in the 1990s, NATO has played a major security role in the region. It intervened in Bosnia and Kosovo in the bloody wars and marked the eventual breakdown of Yugoslavia into separate states. Today, three of the six Western Balkan states are in NATO, Albania, Montenegro, and North Macedonia, and three are not, Serbia, Kosovo, and Bosnia and Herzegovina. The Kosovo gunfight is a cause for concern. Hostilities are on the rise between minority ethnic Serbs and majority ethnic Albanians in Kosovo, which was a province of Serbia during the Yugoslavian times, but broke away and declared independence in 2008 following a bloody war in the 1990s. The United States and 22 of the 27 European Union states recognized its statehood, while Serbia and Russia regarded it as a breakaway province. In May, troops from the NATO-led KFOR peacekeeping force were injured trying to manage ethnic Serb-Albanian clashes in northern Kosovo, close to the Serbian border. Kosovo Serbs are also highly distrustful of national authorities and retain close relations with Serbia. In September, four people were left dead after a gunfight between ethnic Serbs who had barricaded themselves in a monastery, and so said Kosovo authorities. As a result, NATO has sent around 1,000 extra troops to Kosovo and stepped up patrols in the predominantly Serb north, and this makes KFOR's troops total to more than 4,500, according to news agency Reuters. Speaking on Monday in the capital of Pristina, Stoltenberg said that NATO would, quote, do what is necessary to maintain a safe and secure environment and freedom of movement for all people in Kosovo, end quote. Quote, we are now reviewing whether we should have a more prominent increase to ensure that this doesn't spiral out of control and create a new violent conflict in Kosovo or the wider region, he said. Well, Republika Srpska is threatening to secede from Bosnia. Meanwhile, in Bosnia and Herzegovina, one of the multi-ethnic states' two political entities, the Republika Srpska, has been threatening to secede. Republika Srpska makes up about half of the territory of Bosnia and Herzegovina and is home to some 1.2 million people. Mostly ethnic, was also formed during the violent breakdown of Yugoslavia and in a context of bloody war. The European Union, which leads a peacekeeping mission in Bosnia and Herzegovina, is unpopular in Republika Srpska. Instead, the entity has close ties with Serbia and Russia. The European Union forces in Bosnia and Herzegovina took over from a NATO mission in 2004. Well, there's a message to Moscow, with various fires smoldering, Stoltenberg's statements in Skopje at the end of his tour on Wednesday was delivered alongside leaders from four Balkan NATO allies, Albania, Croatia, Montenegro, and North Macedonia, and aims partially at Moscow. NATO sees Russia as playing a destabilizing role, particularly since the invasion of Ukraine. Quote, authoritarian states like Russia seek to undermine our democracies with cyber and hybrid threats, Stoltenberg, who is tipped as soon leave his post at the head of the Western Military Alliance, it said. As Bojana Zolic of the European Union Institute for Security Studies explained, in general, Russia's aim in the region is to stop the expansion of NATO, its absorption of states into the European Union. The war in Ukraine has also served to underline existing divisions, the analyst from the European Union-funded research agency said, quote, the Western Balkans is not unified when it comes to the response to the war in Ukraine. And this was to Moscow's advantage. Quote, Russia always wants to seize any opportunity it has to produce disorder and to inflame hostilities in the region, and in a way, use ethnic structures to its own benefit, Zolic advised Deutsche Welle. So what was Stoltenberg trying to achieve on his trip? For Zolic, Stoltenberg's trip was mainly about sending a clear message to the region and other actors present and involved, including Russia, that NATO remains strongly committed to engulfing or to ensuring security. A greater NATO presence in Kosovo ought to encourage all sides to show restraint and therefore hopefully support the reinvigoration of the effective normalization dialogue between Pristina and Belgrade, he said. Serbia, which aspires to be part of the European Union but not NATO, would itself not link conflict with the military alliance, Zoric said. And most European Union states are in NATO. These days, Belgrade has stable relations with NATO, according to the analyst. So what's the risk of further conflict? The analyst doesn't see a danger of overt confrontation on the horizon, however. Quote, not even now or in the near future, Russia be able to afford entering a war on the Western Front, Balkan Front, particularly having in mind the fact that half of the Western Balkans is in NATO, Zoric said. Instead, Moscow would be more likely to continue with its current modus operandi of encouraging disorder by claiming I lost my space. Well, I'm just evidently exhausted. Didn't get much sleep, and I'm feeling that I'm falling asleep as I'm trying to read these articles to you. Anyway, so it's like about 1:07 in the and we've been on for about an hour and 7 minutes. So rather than, I think I probably need to get something to drink, maybe unload that way. So I guess the best thing to do is simply say thank you for being with us today. Hopefully you'll join us as well tomorrow. Tomorrow is another day. Bear with me a moment here. Here it is. Have a good